This episode of Misadventures in Marketing is brought to you by the American Marketing Association, San Francisco. AMASF is a member-run organization that has been serving the Bay Area marketing community for over 80 years. Through programs, events, workshops, and discussions that introduce the latest trends and developments in the industry, to networking events that bring together the best marketing minds in the region, AMASF diligently works to foster professional learning and career advancement opportunities for all of its members. Joining is easy. To become a member of AMASF, go to amasf.org. That's amasf.org, and click on Get Involved on the top menu, then become a member. For just $199 a year, you'll get access to events, resources, credentialed learning opportunities, and a community of fellow marketers who will help you expand your network and advance your career. The AMASF membership, the investment you make for the career you love.
You have been in companies where you've just been told, get more leads by Friday, by the end of the week, by the end of the month.
I think we all have, yeah.
Have you ever felt like you had to sacrifice, you know, a long-term investment, you know, to make, try to make a quarterly number? Have you felt like you've been in those situations?
Constantly,
yeah.
Hello, and welcome to the Misadventures in Marketing podcast, presented by the American Marketing Association San Francisco chapter. I'm Steve Haney, a fractional CMO in Silicon Valley.
And I'm Peter Farrago, a high-tech marketing executive in the Bay Area. Each week, Steve and I come together to talk about all things in high-tech marketing.
We share our own experiences running marketing teams with a special focus on technology startups, our successes, our failures, what worked and what didn't. We'll also be inviting our CMO friends and other marketing colleagues onto the show every once in a while, and hopefully impart some wisdom along the way. Peter, how have you been?
I'm living the dream, Steve. Been okay at work.
And what is your dream?
What's my dream, Peter? Is world domination for my little tiny startup.
Your little company.
Big dreams. Yeah, I've decided to go all in on LinkedIn because, you know, there's some stats that say 80% of all your leads are going to come from LinkedIn now. It's like for B2B, the main channel. But I'm trying to take advantage of the fact that we have these great thought leadership guys and at our company, and we could create a content engine. I'm basically trying to do like two meaningful posts a day, 6 days a week now on LinkedIn. Video snippets and blog posts and founder marketing posts. I'm in that grind. I'm in that haze, but I'm also seeing like our activity really going up. I'm not measuring it. I'm just kind of seeing everything go up and to the right as far as like impressions being driven and all that. So we're building out our reach, and it's been a taxing last couple of weeks.
Well, you know, I think that's a great lead into our topic, because today we wanted to talk about long-term versus short-term tensions in marketing. And not just for the CEO, but for the whole marketing function, kind of like the Jekyll and Hyde conundrum, where you've got short-term demands hitting lead gen goals, generating leads, going to events, having to set up booths and do all this kind of like very tactical, physical, on-the-ground stuff that helps with this quarter, the next quarter, versus what you're doing now, which is generating all this content, certainly contributing to the brand, building brand, and having it there for SEO juice and all the other benefits that, you know, your online presence brings to the company over time, that may be 12 to 24 months out. And so, you know, when you're in this identity crisis, are you doing Dr. Hyde things, which of course is kind of like the long-term, you know, brand building stuff, versus Jekyll things, which is maybe the short-term kind of visceral animal stuff that needs to get done now. How do you make that trade-off? How do you work that within the company? What approach do you take in terms of long-term activities, in terms of building brand and presence versus the short-term stuff, and how you balance that tension?
Yeah, I was enjoying you struggling through the Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde metaphor, I was like, oh, I'm not going to interrupt. I'm going to see how Steve sticks the landing on this funky metaphor. Right.
Well, Dr. Jekyll, he's like the normal intellectual.
He's the good guy. Yeah, he's right. The good
guy. Dr. Hyde is just, he's all id, like it's all lizard brain. Got to close deals now. Marketing, whatever you're doing in terms of trying to understand building the business over time, you got to stop that right now and do nothing but focus on generating X more amount of leads this quarter. It's the thing that keeps CMOs up at night, don't you think? Because you don't want to get fired, right?
No,
you want to maintain that relationship with the company. But, you know, it's just, and it's the nature of a startup. You're hand to mouth, period.
First of all, the topic is a great one. And the episode title is Short-Term Wins, Long-Term Losses. And I do think you're describing accurately this pressure that you're under as a marketing lead or department to help deliver this immediate short-term impact, immediate growth. And often I think marketing folks feel like that undermines long-term brand investment. And it is a perpetual challenge to focus on longer term and talk about brand building. And it can seem like a little bit of a impractical, dirty word or concept internally, and that we just need leads, leads, leads. But it becomes very tactical. You end up feeling a little bit like a short order cook.
Exactly. And, exactly. You know, well, and listen, to be fair, it's like that John Maynard Keynes quote about the macro economies in the long term are all dead. Right.
Yeah. So there's a book. There's a book I had to read in econ. It was like a fictionalized version of that that taught you all these concepts. Yeah.
You have to do the short term, because if you don't, the long term will never come. But there's got to be some balance. And the thing is, you're kind of designated as the head of marketing to be the one looking around corners to see what's coming up or asteroid coming out of left field.
But you have been in companies where you've just been told, get more leads by Friday, by the end of the week, by the end of the month.
I think we all have, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And that's the challenge. So have you ever felt like you had to sacrifice, you know, long-term investment, you know, to try to make a quarterly number? Have you felt like you've been in those situations?
Constantly, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, every time. It's just the way it's worked, so.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes, you know, we sometimes divide the world of marketing between brand and performance when we're talking more about advertising and the goals of the advertising spend. Mm-hmm. But early on, when you're a generalist, and some people call it pie shape, some people are now calling it V-shaped, to basically when you have to do a little bit of everything, brand building, communications, PR, product marketing, demand generation, all that stuff, you're going to be working on something and then get interrupted because, of course, the survival needs making this quarter, making this year and revenue will keep coming up. And you don't want to ignore it and you don't want to fail to participate in it. And you can't act like, well, I'm just marketing. And those are the things that can get you fired, right? Because you need to take responsibility for revenue outcomes and you need to do your part. And you definitely need to look like you have a good attitude about it. I think that goes without saying, but I will say don't do it begrudgingly and make faces.
Yeah.
it's also not going to help you in your career, right?
So. Right. Well, and there's that old saying, no good deed goes unpunished.
Yeah.
Right. Where, you know, it's the right thing to spend some percentage of the marketing functions, even if it's just you and four other people, or you and 35 other people, or you and 100 people, on the longer term aspects of the business that it's your responsibility to craft and focus on. But it you know, may not be appreciated by the CEO at all, may not be appreciated by other members of the management team. And certainly sales, you know, and we've had this discussion before, and I think you've articulated it really well in the past. They're living quarter from quarter, and we have to be completely sympathetic to that because in most companies, you don't have a job if you miss your number after a couple quarters. That's not unusual, right? So absolutely have to be focused on empowering the sales team, helping them hit the quarterly number. How about yourself? Do you have any specific examples of this?
When I start a new company, I guess I've developed a little bit of a playbook. It's subconscious, but we talked about, do you go address the website when you start a new company?
Right, the marketing audit. Yep.
Yeah, but in the brand audit, I guess, I know that I have a short window in which to like think about the company positioning and messaging. And the reason I probably look at the website and at least want to up level, you know, kind of our positioning on the homepage and maybe flesh out the product page or figure out ways to explain it better and more benefits, more value prop, that kind of thing, is because I am racing to get some product marketing strategy, brand stuff done, at least foundational messaging done as fast as I can before I know people are going to start making me want to like bring in the leads, the demand gen. I attempt to do that to some degree every time. The other thing I do is like a situation analysis. Here's our situation. Here's what we want to get done. Obviously, revenue targets are in there as well.
Right.
But if everyone's committed to the plan, then you get a little more time to say, well, we know this is going to compound over time. It's going to make a big difference. And you can start seeing SEO, inbound lead stuff, and growth on important social following. You can start seeing that change to some degree to give you some early indications. So my point is, if you go in heavy like I am now with a thought leadership content program, one is that our long-term costs will go down if we build up organic inbound, and you want to prove over time that like those leads coming in from organic are bigger ACVs, closing faster, higher quality, better close percent. You want to basically also not just get inbound, but prove that they're better, because you're going to get less inbound than outbound. You can always scale outbound faster. As I talk about scalability or leverage or repeatability a lot. Uh-huh. So if someone's coming in and saying, hey, I need this, like all this short-term stuff, then after a while, it's like, hey, we should do this, but it's not going to scale very well. It's not going to be very repeatable, or it's not going to give us efficiencies or leverage over time. We need to build into these other things too, so that we're not always tied to this.
Right.
Repeatability, scalability, make a plan, communicate the plan. Try to set expectations and keep maintaining that this will be really good. This is going to take a long time or some time. Don't do that only. You have to do a mix of that plus the other thing.
Yeah. I think when you're doing the short-term thing, and we'll discuss the pros and cons here, but when you're only looking at short-term performance-based kinds of marketing activities, we kind of hinted at this, you miss the long-term growth. You're not planting the seeds in the garden for the tree you will never, whose shade you will never live to enjoy, kind of thing, right?
Right.
Of course, the brand suffers. If there's no, like you said, when you come aboard and you're doing your marketing audit and you're trying to understand what's where and what to focus on and what not to focus on. And, you know, you try to get that foundational stuff in place, right? Because if you don't, there's brand erosion. Poor recall, meaning nobody knows who you are because you haven't been doing the longer term work. I mean, like the stuff you're doing now on LinkedIn, that's just like the beginning of planting these seeds so that you're present. You want to be around. You want the thought leadership. And it's not just like the SEO juice or the referral traffic or any of that stuff as much as it is just planting the brand in the mind so that 5 years from now, when somebody needs a product from your company. And I think this is another good point. McNamara's fallacy, named after Robert McNamara, the legendary head of Department of Defense. It's like everything we have to look at has to be these numbers-based, short-term activities. And you're not stepping back and looking at the bigger picture. And I think kind of, we touched on this in the green room before we started, about, you know, dealing with AI in the same way. It's like, you know, the AI can crank out a bunch of stuff, but at the end of the day, you as the head of marketing need to step back and say, okay, what does this analysis mean? What do these numbers mean? Does this pass, as you called it, the smell test, right? Which again, I think is great because the actual act of smelling something is very visceral, right? Yeah, and it's not quantitative. It's not quantitative at all. It's not quantitative at all. So, you know, you got your CEO beating you over the head, and we've all been there. I need leads now. I need leads, you know, hold more webinars, you know, triple those email campaigns. Let's get the leads in because our sales guys are not hitting their number. They need more leads. We're not saying you don't do it, but the point is if you're just leaning on all that and that's taking up 80% of your capacity in the marketing function, then there are these longer term consequences.
Yeah, there's a lot in there. So getting back to first principles, I know that short term wins will pay the bills and the long term investments build the company. And you mentioned the McNamara thing. It was over reliance on data or something, or what?
Yeah,
was
that's basically it. The McNamara fallacy is just over reliance on data.
Right. Yeah. Not using your judgment or intuition and stuff. There's a couple things that come to mind that I feel like are kind of truisms. One is you will get pushed into some, quote unquote, these fast activities like webinars and stuff you mentioned. And what they'll do, like in a B2B business, is they'll help you pump up numbers that people think are useful to growing the business, like your MQLs. It's like, oh, I'm going to do all this kind of fast, top of the funnel, quick impact things. But they often will stall in the funnel. They're not going to convert. And so the other concept I come back to, I don't know if you learned this, I don't know if it was an advertising class when I was a senior, but it was very behavioral and theoretical. But we studied something called the cognitive response model. And all that really means is that it takes a while for a person to move something from short-term memory to long-term memory. And so when you get into advertising, you think about the number of impressions you have to make, or the number of times someone has to hear Coke is it, Coke is it, till they remember Coke is it. And they end up with unaided recall versus aided recall. So you're basically getting at this idea of what does your brand stand for when people hear about you? What are the associations? And so when I talk about pumping up MQLs, the problem is that your brand doesn't have the trust yet built up and the authenticity and the credibility. And so you can like call a lot of attention to it, but people, they don't associate it with the things you need them to associate it with over time. And that takes a while. Well, so when I think about what I'm doing right now at the company I'm at, we are doing a lot of thought leadership and content to build credibility and all the stuff we want with our brand. But I'm almost thinking about it like a high saturation ad campaign, I guess, meaning like I'm up to 2 social posts a day. Like I'm going to go very heavy into this. Uh-huh. And I'm trying to get a lot of impressions or touches in short term with customers, repetition. But it is around quality things, around brand attributes that I care about over time as well. So it's an interesting approach where I'm kind of mixing the sprint and the marathon somehow together, the short term and the long term, because you know, that's how we have to do it. Of course, things are on digital, so you can see it better. I'm tracking, you know, my sources, so I can see that I'm doing all this stuff and it's having an impact of sending more traffic to the site. Do they come into the funnel and convert better? This was actually the HubSpot concept. They sort of popularized this term of inbound marketing, which just meant you attract people to you. And that's why you can't always rush these things. You can't just push and push and push and be very aggressive if you don't have a good reputation, right?
This episode of Misadventures in Marketing is brought to you by Peak Bound Studio, the Bay Area video production house for high-impact marketing videos. Online video is quickly becoming the universal language of business and the primary medium through which marketers speak to their prospects. According to Forbes and market research firm Statista, 90% of all businesses are currently using online video in their marketing. And in 2025, 85% of those businesses will increase their spending in online video over last year. Enter Peakbound Studio. Peakbound Studio is not just another video production team. They are storytellers, visual artists, and high-tech experts rolled into one. They manage everything from the initial concept to the final edit. Your online video presence has to be responsive, vibrant, and constant to get the attention of prospects and spread your message into every corner of the marketplace. Peakbound makes sure your messages are unique, compelling, and pop in today's attention-scarce world. So whether you need brand storytelling, customer testimonials, corporate videos, or short-form social media content, Peakbound delivers videos that don't just look good, they work. Learn more at www.peakbound.studio. That's www.peakbound.studio. Peakbound Studio, the video production house that puts your online video to work.
You need both.
So I think that what a lot of people do is they just carve out a brand budget. I think that what was that saying about if you at a car dashboard, you understand the structure of the automaker's corporate organization.
Oh, right? Yeah. Yeah.
And so, which kind of leads back to the budget and the finances. And it's really about, if you look at the budget of a marketing team, it pretty much says everything about where the priorities are. And so I think if you carved out whatever it is, 10, 15, 30% of the budget and said, okay, this is going to be focused on building the brand, long-term, all the things you've mentioned, brand recognition, aided recall, unaided recall, all these things being present. And then the other 70% is going to be whatever for lead gen or, you know, other aspects of the marketing function. That would certainly be a way to go. I don't know if you've got any thoughts on this. I can say right now that my marketing budgets in the past, I don't think I've ever been that sophisticated in the way that I've broken that down in terms of, okay, when I look at this, this is for 2, 3, 4 years from now, maintaining the brand, maintaining the recognition versus these are going to be how many people I'm going to have on my field marketing team, what regions they're going to be in, what the programs are going to be. Any thoughts on that? Any way you've approached that in terms of the way you break down your budget for the brand and the long-term versus short-term metrics-driven stuff?
I'm trying to think if I've done it overtly. I definitely communicate it. If I'm doing a full marketing plan and socializing it, break it into conceptually into these a pie chart and percentage allocation. Half of what we're doing is going to be for helping with the quarter, the sales enablement stuff, the whatever, whatever. Maybe 30 to 40% of it is like longer term building because, you know, we're going to end this quarter and you need to do something next quarter, or we need to bring our total cost down over time, our customer acquisition cost. And then I always like to leave experimental kind of slide, like 20% because I want to be able to take big swings or have wild ideas that don't get like reasoned to death. We want to take some risks, and this is in the risk bucket. I will conceptually talk about like short-term, long-term, and then maybe like bigger bets. I don't know that it gets fully represented in a budget. If it's a larger company, then yes.
And you know this, especially in bigger companies that we've worked at, there tends to be this big machine, and it's the old aircraft carrier metaphor, and you just can't turn it on a dime. Now you're getting with the culture and the processes, and it's very conservative, and you can't take $100 million marketing budget and just turn it to where you feel it needs to go. It literally takes years to make this stuff happen over time, to restructure, because there are certain revenue streams and business models that are working. And if you just try to upend them, you can crash a lot of things and destroy them.
The CEO for a marketing leader is probably the biggest variable. And that does affect short-term versus long-term thinking. If a CEO cares about, say, thought leadership and being perceived in a certain way, then they are more open, typically. This is a rule of thumb. There's always exceptions, but they're more open to this idea of brand building. And I look for that. And everybody who's been a marketing leader knows this. Like, you're looking for whether or not your CEO has a certain set of beliefs or values around it, or you might not take that job. Now, your boss could change, obviously. And then I'll say the main thing that was coming to mind when you were just explaining your last point is that there is a context or a backdrop. Yes, I can have these values around brand building in the long term, but if we're really under a lot of short-term survival pressure, that's going to change what we're working on. Like, yeah. I was at Yahoo, which was a huge company, you know, $10 billion in revenue, 10,000, 12,000 people, and you know, maybe less of a machine the way you were describing, but definitely like inertia, big process, you know, huge teams, huge budgets. In aggregate, we just never had enough to go around. But in aggregate, I guess they were big numbers, covering probably too many product lines, if I think about it. But the company, you know, was not growing. It was pretty flat overall, right? And primarily internet-based. And mobile, you know, usage is on mobile now. Like people are using Instagram Reels and people are using TikTok and people are using whatever. They're on LinkedIn now and all that's usage is mobile. So Yahoo is a very desktop web browser oriented kind of company and set of products. And so it did not transition into that the same way. And so it's got a declining user base. It's big and it's not declining a lot, but it's a little bit every year. And so them's the breaks. And my point is when you're at that stage of that company's life, when it's not growing the same way, it's a lot harder to talk about brand building. You know what I mean? I guess I'm bringing that up because I've never felt such acute short-term pressure in any job. I mean, aside from some startups where we just knew we had to really get things going and seemed more rational, the short-term pressure was very high and systemic. It would get created. Maybe this McNamara thing has something, some hook in here, but we would create a revenue plan that wasn't realistic. And then we would always be behind on the revenue plan. And then every quarter we were dying, trying to get close to making the revenue number for the quarter, but we would never make it. And the amount of like burning the furniture to keep the house warm was crazy.
Well, that's the thing. Poor management is constantly in panic mode. Good management is looking for longer term and business sustainability. And I'm not saying that you don't have these moments where it's all hands on deck and, you know, you got to generate the leads and you got to make this stuff happen. But, you know, it's one of those, everybody just calm down. Everybody just take a beat and let's tackle this problem in a realistic way. And if you do that, everybody's behind you. Your customers are behind you. Your board is behind you. Company employees are behind you.
Yeah.
But I've definitely been in particularly smaller companies where it's constant panic mode. And this is because people don't calm down and say, okay, what is the plan? What's the business? How are we going to get from here to there? And then just unrealistic expectations. Like you said, this one company you were at where they put together a business plan that just wasn't realistic. And, you know, if the CEO is doing his job and he goes back and he says, this is what we can really do. And the board is saying, well, no, you've got to do 5X that. And you just say, look, it's not going to happen. And if you have a board that can't accept that, if they're saying, well, my other startup over here is doing XYZ, you've just got to stand up to that board and make it very clear that that's not you. And that's not the company. And here's what you can do. And I don't want to sit here and say, because I have been in these situations with my own startups that I've had board that I've gotten funded and had the rock throwing sessions where you come out pretty beaten up, but you have to just push back and say, this is the reality. And if you don't like it, fire me, because you can't work that way. But if you do come in with a reasonable plan, here's what we can do. Here's how we have to do it. And we've got to do the stuff today for sure. And we've got to address the needs, but we've got to maintain some kind of longer term business sustainability mode within the company, because, you know, otherwise it's like you're eating nothing but frosting and the sugar and the desserts, and you're getting this quick hit and you're not planning your meals, you're not eating all your veggies, you're not looking at the whole picture. This is always a balance.
I think we got at it, which is that short-term versus long-term pressure is not an inside the marketing department or marketing versus sales problem. It is a leadership problem. It's a whether your company is generally growing or not growing. That means whether you're in a market that's growing or not growing. So there's all these macro factors, exogenous factors is my point. And it does come down to leadership and planning for those shocks and having a strategy in place and having people be able to say, okay, this is what's coming at us and here's how we're going to focus on it. And here's therefore how marketing and sales will show up and what we're going to focus on. So I think you just don't want someone in the industry calls them random acts of marketing. I think some people call it panic campaigns, right? Like you just don't want to be chasing your tail and having a lot of context switching and not taking into consideration the bigger picture and the context, because that helps you devise a strategy and a plan and a set of goals the plan will help you reach and all that. And that's the bigger picture. I do believe in a mix and I do believe in constantly investing in the long term. If we know the context, then we'll figure it out.
Yeah. And sometimes it's just the management team accepting the fact that this isn't working, right? Maybe even the business in an early stage startup where you've got a notion of what the model can look like. And again, it's It's a completely different animal from working in a larger company where you've got these sustainable business models that work, where you're kind of making this up on the fly. Are we going to create a repeatable sales process? Where is the revenue going to come from? Who are the customers, right? When you're figuring all that out. And sometimes it just doesn't work. And you have to say, okay, this has got to fold somehow. Maybe we're the wrong management team. Maybe we are the right management team, but the market's just not here yet. Maybe we got to take the tech and we got to sell it off to somebody who can use it, and just waking up to that reality that it doesn't matter short-term versus long-term, something fundamentally in the business is not working. And the management team has to have their come to Jesus moment and make some very hard decisions. But that's really a whole nother podcast topic.
Yeah. But I think what you're getting at is it's not just about leads, right? Like growing your company isn't about leads and, you know, not having a strategy and resetting some short-term plan every 90 days. That doesn't work for marketing and for company strategies, you know, because if you take a step back and look at the customers, there's only so many in a market that are ready to buy, and you're building trust with them and relevance with the market over time until some of those are ready to buy and the time is right. So you need trust and timing and relevance. That doesn't happen from just pushing on getting more leads today. It takes building a reputation and a set of brand associations. And you can't do that exclusively. You have to also drive revenue. But have a plan, have a strategy. Don't get caught into 90-day shampoo, rinse, and repeat on a new chaotic, you know, reset.
Yeah.
So.
All right. Well, Peter, would you like to read us out?
I can do that. Well, thanks to Steve, my co-host. Thanks to our audience for listening. Thanks, of course, as always, to Lorenzo Fernandez-Kopek at Peak Bounce Studios, who makes us look and sound great. Thanks to Ian Robinson-Lambert, our marketing manager, who gets the word out. Thanks so much to Julianne Bornalis, who is kind of our executive producer, I'd say. And she definitely goes through and makes sure that the stories and the narrative makes more sense and has to listen to us. So thank you, Julianne, for helping make us sound smarter than we probably are. Ariana Azevedo for making us look good with graphics and our branding. Of course, as always, to Eric Widener, the president of AMA San Francisco, who is presenting this podcast.